Our next presenter comes to us from the University of Texas School of Public Health, Mr. Saeed Noor, who is a doctoral student in the Behavioral Sciences program. He'll be presenting to us today on the HIV risk associated with injection drug use in Houston, Texas, data from 2009, a late in class analysis. Please join me in welcoming Saeed to the podium.
They are the co-author of the total research, so I have no relationship to disclose at this point. Taking the background, injection drug use is the third most frequent risk factor for HIV infection in the U.S. in 2006 and onward. And one of the unique thing about the injection drug users, they have the dual mode of exposure, the sexual behavior and unsafe drug using practices that underlies their risk, and sometimes it double or quadruple the risk compared to the other population. The main objective of this analysis is to investigate HIV risk patterns among a sample of injection drug users using a latent class analysis approach. And for this analysis, the underlying latent variable is risk that could lead to HIV infection. Our sample is coming from the CDC's NHBS, National HIV Variable Surveillance Program, the second cycle 2009 cycle, and I'm using the data from the Houston, Texas. And the data was collected through the respondent-driven sampling. So this analysis is primarily a methodological paper, so we use maximum likelihood to calculate the posterior probability of being in an HIV risk class from 9 drug and sexual behaviors. What we did, instead of looking at the behaviors in separate, drug using and sexual behavior in separate, we tried to combine them and create a class, a risk class, so that we can identify the population in different classes. And then we can see what are the correlates of risk behaviors. So a series of LCM models were estimated to identify the model with optimal number of classes. We used Bayesian information criteria, low Mendel Rubin likelihood ratio test, and entropy to identify the risk classes. The posterior probability for the latent class membership for each participant were exported to STATA and used to identify socioeconomic covariates. And to avoid distorted classification, a latent multinomial regression model was fitted simultaneously to identify optimal number of HIV risk classes as well as predictors of the class membership. We used 50 sets of random starting values for the initial stage and 5 optimization for the final stage of maximum likelihood optimization versus baseline to have a perfect model that fits the data best. We use M+ for the LCA and latent multinomial regression and STATA for data management and discrete statistics. Our total sample size was 523. A majority of the sample were older, male, and non-Hispanic black. So we used 3 categories, BIC, p-value for MLR error test, and entropy. The main criteria here for BIC to have the lowest BIC with the class. So here we can see that 5-class model has the lowest BIC. So then we looked at the entropy value. It has a 0.87, the 6 class, and 2 class has 0.89. So it's not exclusive which classes fit the data best. So we look at the p-value for the MLR test. Here the MLR test is comparing between a model with K classes versus K-1 classes. So there's a p-value of less than 0.05 indicating that the 2-class model is better than the 1-class model. But this one is showing that 3-class model is better than the 2-class model. And then we have all the non-significant results. So we conclude that the 3-class model fit the data best. And we also look at the class assignment probability by class, and we can see the diagonal thing has the highest value. It's indicating that classification is almost perfect. Not almost perfect, one would be the perfect, but close to it. So here we looked at the behaviors that you used and see their probability of falling into class. So here we have the behaviors. We use 4 drug-using behavior. One is years injecting. The class 1 has like a 35 years of injecting, whereas the class 3 has like a 20 years of injecting. But using a sterile needle all the time, we can see that it has a very unlikely that this group of people using a sterile needle but very high likely of sharing the needle and sharing the equipment. Compared to this one, it has like a moderate 0.25, 0.4, 0.71. But these class people, the lowest year of injecting, high likelihood of using a sterile needle, very low likelihood of sharing a needle and sharing equipments. So these are the drug using behaviors. And here are the sexual behaviors. We use a number of sex partners. We use the condom use at last sex. We use a partner type at last sex. Drug and alcohol use and anal sex. Again, here we can see this group of people has very low condom use, high exchange partners, high drug and alcohol use and anal sex. And this group has that high condom use compared to this group, quite equally distributed main partners and casual partners, low drug and alcohol use and anal sex. So we think that three class model fit the data best. The high HIV risk class is 42%, moderate HIV risk class is 25% of the sample, and low HIV risk class is 33% of the sample. So the high HIV risk class never used a sterile needle, condom use is low, but use of drug and alcohol during and before sex was high, and 30% had anal sex at last sex. And the moderate HIV risk class, higher drug risk behavior, but lower sexual risk behavior. And the low HIV risk class never shared a needle, and more than two-thirds reported main partner or casual partner. We did the test, HIV testing at the end of the interview, and we had the results, but so to say, after the interview, we used that result to measure our classification, and we can see that high risk class had the highest prevalence of HIV cases, almost 9%, whereas the low risk class has the lowest prevalence, 4%. So that's kind of justify empirically that our classification is appropriate. And now we're talking about the multinomial regression model. We can see that age, history of incarceration in past year, and being homeless associated with risk classes. Those people who have a history of being in jail and prison has lower odds to be in the low class. Those people have a history of being homeless has a lower odds to be low and moderate class compared to the high risk class. So we conclude that LCA is an effective approach to empirically categorize and identify risk pattern using multiple indicators. So it's a new approach in HIV risk class, especially for the IDUs, because they are not only the sexual risk factor, not only the drug using behavior, but there's a combined. And so HIV risk varies among IDUs as the drug and sexual risk pattern varies. Age, homelessness, and history of incarceration are contextual factors of the observed risk pattern. The particular concern, this is really puzzling for us because most of the literature showed that among the hardcore drug users, the sexual and drug using behavior are separate. Those people who are highly opiate users, they have a low sexual drive. But among our this population, we are saying that there's a clustered pattern. Those people, a group of people using both drugs and sexual risks. So they are at higher risk of HIV. And that doesn't fit with the theoretical perspective. One of the explanations we are thinking about it, maybe it's due to the adjustment of the body to that pharmacology, that after a certain time they're getting adjusted to it, or it's a survival sex. To support the drug-using behaviors, they need to have a money flow coming in, and most of the people are homeless, as a majority of the population showed, homeless, and they don't have a steady income, so probably they're using sex as a means to get money, or drugs or shelter or something like that. That can be a possible explanation. In both the cases, structural intervention can be a majority here. So we think that considering the dual exposure, intragroup and intragroup HIV infection may occur at a higher rate and spread rapidly than previously anticipated. The major limitation of our study is a cross-sectional study. We cannot conclude that what caused what, or we can say that they are associated with each other. So we are assuming the contextual factors and the survival sex is associated with the risk behavior among this population. And another thing is a self-report bias, because we ask them to talk about their very private behavior, which is social desirability bias can happen regarding drugs and sex. So there's a possibility of under-reporting. In that case, the prevalence is lower than the actual prevalence, so it makes the case. I'm done. Any question? I'm the last one, so I have to do something.
Do we have any questions for our presenter?
Yes.
Repeat the question. No, you, for the audience.
Okay.
So, sorry, repeat the question.
She's asking that, are we used a continuum of risk as a continuous variable, right?
Yeah. Sort of a traditional
variable instead of a class. Okay. The problem is, some of the variables are yes, no. Like there's a likelihood of using sterile needle. So how frequently used? Always, neighbor, sometimes. But in the terms of risk of the infection, one time is enough. So that's why you use a dichotomized needle sharing and drug using behavior and the sexual behavior again. Using the condom or not using the condom. The one time can enough to get you infected. So when I have a dichotomous variables, so LCA would be better approach rather than having a continuation. Because we always doing calculating the probability of falling or reporting or endorsing that item. We can create an ordered variable in the classes, so we can do that. And the further analysis of my second paper is using LCA in an ordered form. So that's like a continuation of scale, but not an actual continuing scale. But it's an ordered LCA. That's what we did.
So you have a theoretical argument
where risk should be categorized
rather than.
Yes,
yeah.
I do believe that.
Okay, one more question back there.
Can you talk a little bit more about posterior probabilities in the LCA? I get questions all the time that I have a really hard time explaining it because I don't understand the equations that underlie it. So can you just give me like a one sentence summary of what posterior probability is?
I'm with you on that. I don't understand the equations. No, but the main thing is the probability of endorsing that item. So if I'm asking somebody, did you smoke or not? Yes, no. And a lot of people are saying yes, some people are saying no. So when I have a sample, I'm using optimization, the maximum likelihood optimization, to see how many people has the highest probability of endorsing that item. Those people who have the highest probability, we're cutting it off, where there's a meaningful cut points and putting them in one bucket. Okay, and then the low people who has the lowest probability in a third bucket. And those people have a middle probability in the middle bucket. But that classification can vary depending on the answers. So that's why you can have two class model, you can have a four class model or five class model. Then you use that fit indices to identify which is the optimal classes. Yes. No.
Repeat the question, please.
She's asking about M+, the software I used, and what the coding I have used for that thing. I do the classifications, then I exported the posterior probability into Stata so that I can see what the covariates are. Okay. Then I put back the covariates, and then I run the final model with the covariates in the model, explaining C on all the variables and the multinomial variables in the model at the same time. It's a simultaneous multinomial.
And you know, with Karen Nyland that you cited, she says if your entropy is 0.8 or above, you can actually assign people with classification is good enough that you can actually find people to particular classes. So if the
C bond
didn't work, then you can always say class 1, class 2, class 3.
She's asking about the entropy as a fit indices, but my understanding, entropy is not a very good measure to make the classification because there's no perfect cut point, which is the best one. So that's why I use three different indices to have a overall idea and always read the probabilities to see that either the classification makes sense. Over here, it makes sense because one group is a high-risk group and one is a very low and the moderate group. So if you find people that is not making any sense, then something wrong with the classification. Any more question?
Any other questions for our presenter?
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Saeed, for such a great presentation.